This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for October 15th, 2020. Today's program is produced with the Sunlight Media Collective. This is Meredith DiFrancesco with Don Neptune Adams. For the Passamaquoddy Nation at Atsipayek, public drinking water quality has been an unaddressed problem for decades, causing tribal members to buy water, fill jugs at a local source, or rely on donations. The Passamaquoddy Water District, PWD, named after but not run by the tribe, is a so-called quasi-municipal district serving approximately 618 households at Atsipayek, also known as Pleasant Point, and parts of Eastport. The source of the public water supply, which individual households are billed for, is the local Boyden Lake and its watershed. At issue is water odor, discoloration, and a documented high level of trihalomethanes, THMs, a chemical created by the use of chlorine in disinfecting water during the treatment process. As Boyden Lake's water levels have decreased, increased treatment has been required to offset higher levels of organic matter in the water source. Elevated levels of trihalomethanes have been associated with health issues, including cancer and reproductive problems. Beyond drinking water exposure, trihalomethanes can be absorbed through the skin and inhalation during everyday use of tap water. After years of inaction by local or state entities and previous efforts by the tribe blocked, the Passamaquoddy is bringing the drinking water issue front and center by organizing multi-stakeholder meetings with representatives of the water district, local, state, and federal agencies, and the tribe. Meetings began in January, and some headway is being made to find short, medium, and long-term solutions for safe drinking water for Atsipayek and neighboring Eastport. The Passamaquoddy underline that their lack of ability to act independently to solve the crisis is compounded by restrictions from the controversial Maine Indian Claims Settlement Act. This includes the required approval by local municipalities for projects on tribal so-called fee land. Currently, the Maine legislature is poised to consider long-sought changes to the Settlement Act in the bill LD 2094, an act to implement the recommendations of the Task Force on Changes to the Maine Indian Claims Settlement Implementing Act, the result of a months-long process with tribal and state representatives, which passed out of the Judiciary Committee in August. At the end of summer, Passamaquoddy Vice Chief Maggie Dana at Atsipayek, Passamaquoddy Representative to the Maine Legislature Rena Newell, and Passamaquoddy Attorney and Water Advocate Corey Hinton sat down via Zoom with Sunlight Media Collective, WERU, and the Maine Beacon to discuss the efforts to take action on the ongoing problem of safe drinking water. Passamaquoddy Vice Chief Maggie Dana at Atsipayek started by describing how people currently get drinking water at Atsipayek.
People are either buying their water, getting it from Wabanaki Public Health, and that's not like they've helped with bottled water, but it's, you know, it's not a constant thing. It helps, but it's not really solving the problem. So they either buy it. We get some donations. The well in Robinston, they call it the church. It was an old church, and they call it holy water. That's dried up. So that's why I say, you know, it's even triple the challenge now. Or, you know, people are maybe drinking the PWD water that's running in our faucets. Or, you know, go out and buy it. So there's not many options, you know, for us. And to me, when the water you consume relates to the health impacts and the longevity of a people, that can be beneficial or detrimental. And in this case, it's detrimental. So I'm really thankful for Corey and everybody that's been working on this environmental. We all kind of came together and asked Corey for help, and he got some other contacts for us, and we've had multi-party stakeholder meetings.
Passamaquoddy Representative to the Maine Legislature, Rena Newell.
I think I would just like to add to what Vice Chief Dana mentioned as far as the source of the donations. I do believe that Wabanaki Public Health of its staff have been reaching out to various vendors and asking for donations. So we did receive a large shipment recently, again, from a Wabanaki Public Health staffer that reached out to one of the larger grocery chains. However, I do want to mention that the way that the water comes in by donations or by purchase is that it goes into our local food pantry. So there's a set aside for food pantry, which is going in to make a request for your food pantry and to get water. And then there's another distribution where it comes to each household. So you may receive a case or two cases depending on what's come in the form of donations.
Can you describe the drinking water issue at the Piatt? How many people are affected? What is the source of the water and what the quality of that water is and what the health impacts are known? So sort of just a general overview of what the issue is, who's being affected, what the source is, what the concerns are, and we can get into the details as we go.
Does Corey want to answer this?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy. I was just going to ask if you'd like me to, Vice Chief Representative. Is that okay with you, Rena, as well, if I give the background? Okay, so Passamaquoddy Water District is a state-chartered water district created by statute, created by the law of the legislature. And it was created in 1983 to solve a drinking water crisis in Eastport, Perry, and Pleasant Point. There was a company called, I think it was the Eastport Water Company, that delivered water to the area that encompasses Pleasant Point, like I said, Perry and Eastport. And there was the law passed by the legislature calls out the grave situation with respect to the drinking water and problems with that current drinking water system. PWD, Passamaquoddy Water District, was created to solve that problem in the early 1980s. And I'm not exactly sure how it came to be called Passamaquoddy Water District and what the negotiations were around its formation, but essentially there is a board of trustees and an executive director for the district, and they oversee the infrastructure that primarily, it's in three locations. One is at the Boyden Reservoir, which is the primary source, the surface drinking water source. That's where the water comes from, that's delivered to customers. And they have infrastructure out there near the site, a water pump station, and all kinds of cleaning infrastructure and whatnot. And part of it is fed by Boyden Lake. The water comes through a stream that generally passes through like a swampy area, and that water then makes its way to the reservoir. They then clean it there before it goes out. And then there is a water tower at Pleasant Point, and there's infrastructure in Eastport as well. So that's the entity that manages the source at Boyden's Reservoir. The current customers of PWD are in the towns of Perry and Eastport and Pleasant Point, although my understanding is that much of Perry has essentially cut itself off from the PWD water supply for one reason or another. So the customers are primarily on the reservation at Pleasant Point and along the primary roads like Route 190 that run through the area and then in Eastport. So the problems with the water at Pleasant Point have been longstanding, going back since before PWD existed. And I can't tell you exactly how the infrastructure that PWD manages, how different it is from what they used to have. But generally what you have is, you know, a reservoir that over time has become more and more shallow. And so the impoundment of water itself, I think that we were told at a meeting in like January that it's like 10 or 11 feet deep in certain places. Like that's as deep as it gets. And there's sand that fills it in. Also, they get a lot of runoff, I think, from different places and sediment that comes in. So it's become increasingly shallow over time. And I understand that that has created really significant challenges for PWD because increased rainfall and increased wind, increased rainfall will bring more into the system that requires cleaning. And then the wind tends to cause a lot of turbidity and whip up sediment and things that sit in the body itself. And so high wind and high rain tends to cause, they pose major water quality problems for the water district. And at times of year when that weather is sort of most common, you tend to see swings in water quality that result in spikes of a carcinogen called trihalomethane. Trihalomethane or THMs are formed when cleaning agents like chlorine form and react with organic compounds that naturally exist in water. And this is something that exists in all water systems because of the way that, you know, water is cleaned using chlorine products. But when you have a really significant need to clean and there's a lot of inputs going into the system to clean it, you tend to have higher levels of these THMs. And that's what happens in the PWD water supply. And I actually have here, this is a list of this is test results that PWD has taken over the last 10 years or so. And if you look at it, you see that it's about this time of year, it's like maybe 60% of the time not in compliance, maybe half the time they are in compliance with these THM issues. And it's because of the more severe weather that we see this time of year. So for example, you know, we have readings here, and this is information that PWD gave us, but we have some readings in the third and fourth quarters of the year that are more than double the limit for THMs. But, you know, readings from 6 months earlier were, you know, half of the legal limit. And so you see these swings, and it's all because of the precipitation and the sort of natural reactions happening in the system. But then there are other problems with the water as well. We have these weekly meetings internally at Pleasant Point, and Representative Newell mentioned a situation in mid-July where there were reports of black and brown water coming from faucets. And that happens from time to time as well. There are times of year when they have to flush the system or when there are power outages in the system. So like on July 16th, we learned that there was a power outage. And so I'm not exactly sure what happened, but, you know, long story short, black and brown water was able to make its way through the system. It got into the system, and then when they turned the power back on, they had to flush all that water out. And so the black brown water was delivered to customers. We ordinarily expect to get advanced notifications of things like that. And sometimes the water district will put out notices to customers saying, we're going to be doing flushing over the next few weeks. Be aware there may be yellow water, you know, run your water, run your faucets and get that out. In this situation, we didn't get advance notice. So there tends to be discoloration problems. Again, these issues are most pronounced certain times of the year. And there's also odor issues. There are often reports of, you know, like the rotten egg sort of smell. That's pretty common. But interestingly, my understanding from PWD's engineers is that the discoloration and the smell, those tend to be symptoms of groundwater supplies of water, whereas this is a surface supply of water. So there's just a lot going on here. The engineers that have looked at this, I think, generally agree that PWD is failing infrastructure, the reservoir in particular, because it's gradually becoming more shallow, means it has an expiration date unless they can dredge it, and dredging it is uncertain if that would, seems like that wouldn't solve any problems. So, you know, it's like PWD in many ways is the staff are doing their best, but it feels like it's a sort of a losing battle for many, and the structural failings of their infrastructure are pretty apparent to the stakeholders. So that's why the Pleasant Point Tribal Government at the beginning of 2020, going back to the end of 2019, began making a concerted effort to pull together governments that have a stake in the outcome here. And that would include the obviously Zibayig leadership and PWD leadership and the state of Maine drinking water program, the EPA drinking program here in Region 1. And we've made outreach to other municipalities as well, trying to focus on solutions that are either short-term or long-term. And we're in the process of doing that and trying to establish better communications, trying to establish a higher frequency of water quality testing at Pleasant Point. We learned that really PWD never tested at Pleasant Point. and we've now changed that. They used to do it very, very sparingly, and now we're in the process of making that a regular occurrence. So we're working through things like that on the granular level testing, and then looking at long-term feasibility studies. And the tribe is more or less, I would say, driving this effort through leadership, through staff, our environmental staff that the vice chief mentioned have been working really hard. And then Public Works for the tribe has been working really hard to develop these different options that we have to bring, you know, short-term relief and longer-term relief. And, you know, it's even having drinking water provided in bottled water form. If people still have the PWD water, they're showering in it, they're cleaning their dishes, using it for any number of things, and no one really knows, you can ingest THMs from water other than drinking it. And studies suggest that THMs actually are absorbed more quickly through the skin. And so, you know, people just don't know what their water is doing to them. And that's, I think, what fuels a lot of the urgency behind this, especially when people who used to go to Robinson to get water don't have water there anymore because it's dry. I've heard from tribal members that the increased cost of water at the store right now means many people can't afford to buy water. And so, you know, but even then you bring bottled water to the house and then you're showering in it, making your coffee with the, you know, with PWD water, whatever it is. So it's a dangerous cycle and we're trying to break it. And it's just not really clear how, you know, where the relief will come from.
The water district was not testing water at Sepayac until recently. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, they conduct regular testing for the system as a whole. My understanding is, and Vice Chief and Representative Newell, if I'm missing some of these details here, let me know, because this is stuff that they shared with us in our large stakeholder meetings. But generally, I think that when they are conducting their sort of like state EPA mandated Safe Drinking Water Act testing, they conduct it in parts of their system that are not located on the reservation. So I believe that's generally in Eastport. And then I think that they also might do some testing out near the plant as well. But yeah, they were not coming onto the reservation regularly. But there are I think, there were reasons offered as to why they weren't legally required to test at Pleasant Point. And I think that for THMs and some of the things that they were testing for, there were like technical reasons why they tested in Eastport. So the PWD's water engineers, though, they funded a test at Pleasant Point this past winter. And after we pretty much, you know, brought to light the fact that they hadn't been testing, they offered to fund one test. And then I think tomorrow, past Pasmaquoddy Environmental Department staff will be conducting a second test using water bottle kits provided by the EPA. And so PWD will be taking and sending our samples with their samples to EPA labs, and the EPA will be running separate tests than what ordinarily would be taking place. And EPA has suggested that this testing happen at more points in the system so that they can better evaluate how chemicals are reacting and changing as the water is passing through the system. So the EPA is driving an effort to really expand the testing and to make it more comprehensive. And so we're kind of just in the early phases of getting that regular testing underway, but the hope is, with more data, we'll be able to develop more specific responses to what's going on with it.
Representative Newell or Vice Chief Dana, do you want to add anything to what Corey said thus far?
Passamaquoddy Representative to the Maine Legislature, Rena Newell.
I think I would add the point of emphasizing the need to establish a baseline of results. And it certainly is my hope, and Corey's mentioned it, and I think, you know, if we can align ourselves, you know, to quarterly testing, I think we'll be able to pull the data that's needed here in Sepayac. I think the concerns are around cost, and in my opinion, they shouldn't be. There's a need here, and I think I can't echo that enough, that when there is to be testing done at an Eastport site, then there'll also be a testing done here in Subiac. As we move forward, I hope that's the case. Obviously, there's a necessary need. Vice Chief, anything to add on that?
Yeah. You know, just the amount of money that we pay for the water, getting testing is, you know, just a minimal thing that probably should come with it.
We know about the THMs, the trihalomethanes. Are there other chemicals in particular that we know of that are of particular concern for their connections with health issues? And also, can you speak either from data known or from your concerns about the impact, potential impacts or known impacts of chemicals that are in the water to things like Passamaquoddy's cancer rates or other health issues, concerns about those connections?
You know, I think one of our biggest problems here is that we don't know.
Yeah.
And it's hard, you know, anecdotally, you know, I grew up all when I'd visit Pleasant Point and see family, everyone, you know, don't drink the water. And there's high cancer rates. I look at my family tree and most people from Pleasant Point have had cancer. And so there's just like anecdotal thought that there's a connection. And then you look at notices that PWD themselves has put out. And I'm going to just pull them up right here while we're on the phone or while we're on this Zoom. But you know, they say very clearly what trihalomethanes can do to your body. And to read, let's see, where is it? They sent out notices for a while that trihalomethanes do not pose an immediate risk to health, but that long-term exposure can cause damage to organs. I'm not finding this notice right off.
In the Bangor Daily, it had mentioned can cause liver, kidney, and central nervous problems.
Yeah, that's a quote from the Water District notice itself. We didn't make that up. You know, they put that out there in their own notice, and they put out notices on a regular basis. You know, for certain years, they were coming out pretty regularly. And I think if you looked at certain quarters, between 2017 and 2019, almost every other quarter, they were in non-compliance. So these notices were coming a lot. And that's what I think really got people thinking, like, okay, you know, we know people are getting sick because they're a family. We know that. We see that. And then you get these notices that say, well, you know, potentially it's the water that we're giving you that's getting you sick. When we brought this to the Water District, I think we're at a meeting in January. I think their engineer said, well, you know, yeah, there are studies that say that THMs cause cancer, but those studies were conducted with lab rats. And there's, you know, there's any number of, you know, conflicting opinions on what the real health risks of trihalomethanes are. And that was contrary to what their own notices said. And so, you know, we're trying to examine and develop, I'd say, institutional partnerships to help the community, the tribe, evaluate the actual literal connection, if any, between the water and health outcomes in the community. It's extraordinarily challenging to do so. There was an MIT study a few years ago that looked at the prevalence of certain metals in particular in the water, and they did not spend a lot of time examining trihalomethanes. That wasn't the primary focus of it, actually. MIT's reached out to the tribe to offer to assist with follow-up, and they've offered to look at a more narrow, potentially more dangerous, I guess you could say, like subset of trihalomethane. It's something that wouldn't necessarily pop up in your standard test kit, and you wouldn't ordinarily test for this, but MIT is going to be helping the tribe to look at some of these other cancer-causing agents associated with chlorine use in drinking water supplies. So we're going to be examining that. Wabanaki Public Health, we'll see. I mean, we're hoping to sort of explore these conversations at least. Wabanaki Public Health conduct a, they did a public health assessment 5 years ago, and they're going to be conducting a follow-up public health assessment in all the Wabanaki communities this year, and will be including questions for Ziad-Baig related to the drinking water and asking people their opinions and feelings about the water that they receive and how it impacts their mental health. And then there are other partnerships that we've been exploring with larger sort of regional institutions like Maine Health and Maine Medical Center. There's interest in essentially taking the sort of research that MIT would do and water quality results, and then trying to draw, you know, trying to literally examine the causal connection between that and health outcomes. So taking a more, you know, public health approach to that data. So these are all things that, you know, we talk about and we're trying to advance at the same time that, you know, that we're simultaneously pushing for, you know, literal clean water. So we're trying to understand actually what's in the water and what it means to us. We don't know. We just know that PWD sends us notices saying, yeah, I mean, our water could be killing you.
Don Neptune Adams with Sunlight Media Collective.
I could comment on some of the research that, from a scientific point of view, the research that I did on the THMs, the scientific studies have mostly been done on swimmers who are swimming in chlorinated pools. There is a relationship between the serum testosterone levels in adolescents and the amount of time they spend in a pool. Their dermal absorption rate is 80% THM uptake when they're swimming in pools. And it is also possible to inhale THMs. So if anybody has water boiling on the stove or, you know, steam coming up in the shower, they're inhaling those harmful chemicals as well as, you know, possibly drinking it. But from what I can see, it affects adolescents and children more so than any other demographic of population.
Vice Chief Dano and Representative Newell, do you have comments on the concerns about the health impacts?
Yes, Vice Chief Dana here. Just as Dawn explained that, you know, this sometimes we just think about drinking it or doing our dishes, but to have it, I mean, just the way you described that, I have never even thought of that. And, you know, that's just, I don't know, it's heavy to when it affects all the tribal members and, you know, yeah, that's, it's very, like, devastating, I guess, every day. You don't think that it could be that bad, and it is. And I don't know. That's about all I could say.
Representative Newell, your concerns and thoughts on the potential impacts, health impacts of the THMs and the water?
I think just hearing the last three points made by Corey, made by Dawn, and made by the Vice Chief, I think it's just increased my concerns, to be honest. Because it kind of, when Dawn mentioned dermal absorption, not only that, living with this water, you know, is a way of life in order to survive. You know, so every day living here in Ziad-Baig, showering, doing the dishes, doing your laundry, you know, rinsing of your foods, you know, if you're not bringing in your bottled water to, you know, do your dishes or rinse your foods, as much as you can to bring bottled water in to drink, you still have to use the water in a sense. And then Dawn mentioned, even if we're issued a boil water order, and that's what's happened from over the years. Occasional notice will come in, a boil water order. Dawn just mentioned, you know, the possibility of inhaling that anyway. So I think it's definitely expanded my concerns, certainly. Thank you.
You are listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. For the Passamaquoddy Nation at Atsipayek, public drinking water quality has been an unaddressed problem for decades, causing tribal members to buy water, fill jugs at a local source, or rely on donations. The Passamaquoddy Water District, PWD, named after but not run by the tribe, is a so-called quasi-municipal district serving approximately 618 households at Atsipayek, also known as Pleasant Point, and parts of Eastport. The source of the public water supply, which individual households are billed for, is the local Boyden Lake and its watershed. At issue is water odor, discoloration, and a documented high level of trihalomethanes, THMs, a chemical created by the use of chlorine in disinfecting water during the treatment process. As Boyden Lake's water levels have decreased, increased treatment has been required to offset higher levels of organic matter in the water source. Elevated levels of trihalomethanes have been associated with health issues, including cancer and reproductive problems. Beyond drinking water exposure, trihalomethanes can be absorbed through the skin and inhalation during everyday use of tap water. After years of inaction by local or state entities and previous efforts by the tribe blocked, the Passamaquoddy is bringing the drinking water issue front and center by organizing multi-stakeholder meetings with representatives of the water district, local, state, and federal agencies, and the tribe. Meetings began in January, and some headway is being made to find short, medium, and long-term solutions for safe drinking water for Atsipayek and neighboring Eastport. The Passamaquoddy underline that their lack of ability to act independently to solve the crisis is compounded by restrictions from the controversial Maine Indian Claims Settlement Act. This includes the required approval by local municipalities for projects on tribal so-called fee land. Currently, the Maine legislature is poised to consider long-sought changes to the Settlement Act in the bill LD-2094. An act to implement the recommendations of the Task Force on Changes to the Maine Indian Claims Settlement Implementing Act, the result of a months-long process with tribal and state representatives, which passed out of the Judiciary Committee in August. At the end of summer, Passamaquoddy Vice Chief Maggie Dana at Atsipayek, Passamaquoddy Representative to the Maine Legislature Rena Newell, and Passamaquoddy Attorney and Water Advocate Corey Hinton sat down via Zoom with Sunlight Media Collective, WERU, and the Maine Beacon to discuss the efforts to take action on the ongoing problem of safe drinking water.
Just describe a little bit more about what this multi-stakeholder work is right now to flesh that out a little bit more.
Passamaquoddy Attorney and Water Advocate Corey Hinton.
We have tried to sort of segment those discussions into three areas: short-term, medium-term, and long-term objectives. And the short-term objectives primarily revolve around increased water quality testing, increased communication between the water district and the tribal government. And so there, you know, we're literally, I sent an email to PWD afterwards and said, and copied all the tribal leadership and said, you know, when you have a water quality problem, they say that they'll know within an hour, their perceived problem will be a problem in the system. So they said, you know, we'll give you advanced notification of that problem. So we gave them the email addresses for everyone. So, you know, short term, let us know what's going on, test the water more. Also, we've looked at some very discrete fixes, improvements that can be made to the existing system. And so that all I'd say is in the category of short-term solutions. In the category of medium-term solutions, the tribe has been spending a lot of time over the past few weeks evaluating wells located on tribally owned fee lands. So for example, there is a well referred to as the Crawford site, which is across from where the new Atsipayek school will be. That's a piece of land that the tribe owns. And there was a wellhead there, and the tribes spent some time and resources getting that well tested for both its ability to pump a sufficient quantity to provide some water, and also to pump water that's of a safe quality. And so we've gone through that, and that those tests have come back very positively. This would provide a source that people could fill up from, essentially on the reservation. So that's in the category of sort of like, you know, more medium solutions. We feel like in reality, we could probably get, if all things go well, you know, a pump and water flowing there, you know, within a few weeks or maybe a few months. In the long term, but again, that's not municipal water. That's just a place where you can fill up water jugs or bottles or tanks or like that. And that well can only pump to a limited capacity. It doesn't have the capacity to be a municipal supply. And in the long term, the tribe submitted a grant application to the EPA to fund a long-term feasibility study that would examine alternate supplies of water that would replace PWD as a municipal supply. There was a similar study conducted in 2014, and it focused on a few different options that we're going to look at again here. One will be the potential for large capital improvements, PWD, to examine if there are any major overhauls that might solve this issue. Another option would be looking at a groundwater source in Pembroke. And then the other large option that will be examined is use of a groundwater source located on tribally owned fee lands in the town of Perry at a farm that's referred to as Humphreys Farm. Those options were all evaluated back in between 2010 and 2014. And there were some major complications that arose from that. So, you know, it's a little unclear what the feasibility study and what the long-term solutions will be and how that effort will shape up. There's going to have to be a lot of work with local partners to make sure that feasibility study can be done effectively. But that's the long-term goal, is finding an alternate municipal supply. And I'd say that is years away. So that's, and that's what we've been doing in these stakeholder meetings is, you know, inching up, you know, between meetings, there's communications between the tribe and the EPA and PWD. And, you know, the tribe submitted a feasibility study and we're working to get an engineering firm online. And so we've got sort of action items in the long term, short term, medium term arenas. And it's like rolling a boulder up a hill in all these areas and, you know, doing what we can.
Don Neptune Adams with Sunlight Media Collective.
Corey, I have a quick question. How much less of a struggle would it be to get pumping stations on this fee land if it were actually trust land?
Well, if the farm site, so when they tested that site in 2010 or 2014, it was rated as capable of handling a municipal supply. They did like a massive stress test and it passed. Although it caused some complications for wells in the area that maybe were more shallow. If the tribe was able to put that land in trust and use that well the way that it was developed, you know, built to be used, we would have solved this, you know, immediate need to have drinking water. We would have solved this 6-7 years ago. You know, now we're looking at a site next to the reservation that can't even produce as much water. And, you know, it's a pretty uncertain path there. We couldn't put that land in a trust if we wanted. So I guess what I'm saying is we could have had clean drinking water 5, 6, 7 years ago if it were not for the Settlement Act. That land can't be put into trust without the approval of the local municipality. And it's been extraordinarily challenging for the tribe to get consent of the municipality in the past when we needed to build housing. I think the tribe owned land and had to pay like $600,000 on top of, you know, what it already owned to get the town's approval. So, you know, there's a lot of economic considerations, and that's all a function of the Settlement Act. And we can't necessarily afford that. So, I mean, you know, there's just a lot of very real impediments to us being able to solve our own problem. And none of those solutions that we've talked about would necessarily involve, you know, the grand solution of replacing the municipal supply. I mean, this is just coming up with a place where you can fill up water bottles. And we can't even, you know, we've been unable to get that to this point. I recognize that putting a new municipal supply online would require, it would necessarily require working with local governments and really good partnerships. And that's our goal. But it's, you know, all of the more concrete, immediate needs that we can't even, you know, fill for ourselves. And we talk about what kind of pump you can put on a site. And, you know, we don't know if we can even afford to put in an electrical pump. And, you know, we're paying taxes, not land. And so it's hard. It's a combination of lack of resources and the Settlement Act. And the Settlement Act, you know, drives the lack of resources. So it's a really vicious cycle.
Before she had to leave the meeting, we asked Vice Chief Maggie Dana for closing reflections on the drinking water problem and its context.
Do you want to have, one, any comments on this multi-stakeholder process that's in process? Two, talk about the concerns of the lack of sovereignty as a result of the Settlement Act has had on exacerbating, from your view, the situation that stands.
With the multi-stakeholders, I think, like, you know, Corey said, we're just going to keep meeting. We keep coming to the table, trying to find solutions. And those that want to find solutions with us, you know, they join us and we just continue that work. So I'm glad for all those that have, you know, we have federal partners, state partners, just a lot of people there. So I hope that continues. As far as sovereignty, you know, the state doesn't want to recognize our sovereignty. And this in particular is about water sovereignty. We have solutions, and every time that we try to resolve our own problems, and that's what sovereignty is, where we get blocked from the state or restricted. So, you know, that's tough when we try to make changes to the Settlement Act. It's supposed to be a living document. And we do all this work with the state for a couple of years. I don't even know how many months it's been. 15 or 16, and then to get this far, and, you know, you see what's going on at the state house, that they don't want to come back into session, and anyways, it's very frustrating. You know, we keep saying we don't want, you're not giving us sovereignty, we just want you to recognize it. And once we could change this Land Claims Settlement Act, we can do a lot more things for ourselves. So I guess that's my take on it.
Vice Chief Dana, then I guess maybe one opportunity for you to just talk about the importance of addressing this water issue for the Passamaquoddy at Sabaic.
Well, I mean, it's, like I said earlier, it's detrimental to our people, to our survival. You know, when this is real, when the water you consume relates to the health impacts or a longevity of a people, that's a big statement. And you know, this, I keep thinking of systematic oppression, and, you know, this, it keeps coming back to that. And it's very tough that when, you know, we have these problems and we want to fix them, but we keep running into walls or restrictions. And, you know, I think we need to do more than say words. We need action. And I think we have some of that. And as people come into the table and we're working, you know, with the water issue or the LD 2094, but it just doesn't seem to be enough to really solve our problems. And, you know, what do we, as leaders, supposed to tell our people? that's we're trying, but it again, it feels like it's not enough. So all we can do is continue to work, and hopefully something, you know, good happens soon. You know, I think when our people are exposed to, you know, oppression or racial oppression for so many years, you start to lose hope on a lot of things. And, you know, that ties into health. And, you know, it's very depressing. And I'm sure that's how our people feel. And, you know, how do you overcome that? I mean, I wish people, we can get people to realize, I guess when it's not their issue, they just tend to look the other way. But the other side I look to is we've been here for so many years and we've survived, and, you know, we're not going anywhere. So you're going to have to deal with us. For those towns, for those, the state of Maine, we're not giving up. So sorry, I get a little emotional talking about that, but that's what it is.
Thank you, Vice Chief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really one, Vice Chief.
Thank you for, before I leave, just Sunlight Media and the Maine Beacon, I appreciate you taking out time from your busy schedules and wanting to do this piece on with us. And, I think you will really help in what you put out there in the news. And thank you.
In regards to sovereignty, how the Settlement Act structure has prevented the Passamaquoddy from solving this problem. Representative Newell and Corey Hinton, you want to speak to that?
Sure. I'd say, and I kind of mentioned these a little while ago, but the most immediate impediments that arise because of the Settlement Act flow from the inability of the tribe to put land in the trust. If we could take land that we own that's subject to a moratorium on welling, but put that land in the trust and remove it from local jurisdiction, we would be able to solve part of this problem ourselves. We can't do that. So our lands remain subject to moratoriums. But then if you take a step back and look at this from a regulatory perspective, we run into issues because there's a provision of the Settlement Act that says that laws passed by Congress for the benefit of tribes that would affect the preempt laws of the state of Maine don't apply in Maine. Well, there were laws passed by Congress since the Settlement Act that have enabled tribes to manage their own on-reservation drinking supplies under the Safe Drink Water Act. And so this is referred to as treatment as a state. So there are application processes that states will go through and that tribes can go through to assume essentially administrative responsibility for environmental functions. This could be clean water, clean air, or drinking water. And tribes' efforts to do that in Maine under like the Clean Water Act have met stiff resistance. And there's a question, an unsettled question as to whether the tribes can regulate, you know, for example, drinking water supply on reservation because of the Settlement Act. So what I'm saying is, even if we had our own drinking sources on our trust lands and they weren't subject to local zoning ordinances, we could still run into the situation where we have to turn to the state of Maine to regulate and permit our source. And this is the same state that has allowed our drinking supply to reach the depth that it's at now and the problems that it's at now. So, you know, we're not even sure if, you know, everything were to go well for us and we find, you know, let's say tomorrow, a great aquifer, you know, in the heart of the reservation, We couldn't even manage that ourselves because of the Settlement Act. There's this like huge cloud question over the tribe's sovereign power to do that because of the Settlement Act. And that makes our ability to regulate, you know, any number of environmental issues far more complicated. But this is the first time that as a lawyer, I've seen tribes grappling with this in the safe drinking water context. I don't believe that's really come up before. So this is a pretty severe repercussion of it.
Representative Newell?
I think I would only add that, you know, in the past year and a half, in regards to tribal-state relations, we have seen, you know, we have seen some movement in resolving, you know, historic, how can I frame it? I think it's long been understood that there's been a split in the relationships between the tribe and the state of Maine. And I think it's safe to say that in the last year and a half, we have seen movement, you know, between the tribes and the state of Maine, which then changes the view towards the tribes and their capabilities. And to continually to have to educate over and over and over again, you know, holds us back. But if there was a method or a way to communicate constructively and consistently, then that would be an understanding, a better understanding of tribal-state relations and tribal issues and working together with the state. As Vice Chief Dana has indicated in our previous statement, and I personally have indicated it and mentioned it, you know, on the floor of the House, you know, we are not going anywhere, you know. And for future generations, it's absolutely necessary that we work together, that we communicate, and we collaborate to find resolution, you know, to the issues. Corey mentioned earlier, you know, in speaking about where we live here, our neighbors, you know, our neighbors are in Eastport, our neighbors are in Perry. These are our neighbors, but more importantly, across the whole entire state of Maine, we're all neighbors. So what affects us, you know, can necessarily affect another town, but how is that received? How is that received? I can certainly appreciate, you know, any sympathies that have been extended to the people here in Sabaic. But as Vice Chief Dana indicated earlier, is that enough? Absolute action is necessary to remediate this current situation that we have here in Sabaic. But moving forward, you know, I absolutely have to be optimistic that our relationships will change. There's been many, many voices of the past, you know, that have addressed similar issues. And so to find myself speaking about an issue or a related issue dealing with the people here in Sabaic or the tribes in Maine, these, my words have already been previously said, you know, it goes back years and years and years. So I believe the time has changed, that we do absolutely have to work differently in a manner that's more collective and consistent as we move forward. It's absolutely necessary.
At the end of September, we spoke again with water rights advocate Corey Hinton on current developments after the latest multi-stakeholders meeting on the drinking water crisis at Sabaic. Dawn Neptune Adams.
We're here with Corey Hinton, Passamaquoddy tribal member and attorney for the tribe. Corey, could you update us on the latest developments in the Sabaic water crisis?
Thank you, Dawn. I appreciate the opportunity to come back and talk with you again about this. Since the last time we met, there's been some developments. I don't want to say that this problem is by any means solved. In fact, nothing has changed in a physical sense, but there have been some announcements that indicate progress. The biggest announcements came at a stakeholder meeting that the Passamaquoddy tribe held in September. This is the third stakeholder meeting the tribe hosted with federal, state, and local stakeholders. And these have been really great opportunities to hear what the feds and the state are thinking and to interact directly with the water district in a setting where we're having constructive conversations around this issue. These conversations in the past, these stakeholder meetings, have been at times a bit frustrating, and I haven't seen a lot of tangible progress through them, but the tribe feels it's really important to keep the dialogue moving. It was at the last of these meetings that the state admitted that there was an ongoing public health crisis with the drinking water in Pleasant Point in Eastport. And that was followed by a pledge by the state to do more. And that was in June. And I really didn't hear anything from the state. The tribe didn't hear anything from the state. We sort of began plodding along on our own. We've developed a well that we're going to make available to the tribal members at Pleasant Point for as essentially a fill-up station. But the state announced at this last meeting that they were going to be creating a special grant program that would be delivering grants to address specific ongoing threats to public health. This is a program that I don't know if it exists technically yet, but it's new or is going to be coming imminently. And the very first grant to be made for this program is going to be to Passamaquoddy Water District, so that the water district can install what's called a granular activated carbon filtration system, which will polish PWD water after it's been cleaned by the system. This is going to be a one-year pilot project funded for the system. And this is, it's hoped, will reduce odor problems. It'll reduce discoloration in the water. And it'll also address the smell and trihalomethanes in the water, as well as the silent killer there. This is a pilot. We don't know how efficient this will be. We don't know how well it'll work and how expensive it'll be to run. That's why it'll be a pilot. This pilot will be running at the same time that the tribe is administering a grant that was also announced just a few weeks ago. That is a grant award from the EPA to the tribe and Indian Health Service, a federal agency, to administer a feasibility study that will examine alternate supplies of drinking water for Pleasant Point and Eastport. One of these studies was done a few years back, and it resulted in a pretty public conflict with the town of Perry. But the hope is that this will be a more successful effort this time around. So between the end of this year and this time next year, there are going to be a number of hopefully very concrete options that are going to be examined with respect to the water. And the hope is that one of these four or five options that are going to be evaluated, ranging from a new groundwater source to a new surface water source, a new filtration and desalinization, the hope is that one of these will come through as an economical and efficient drinking water supply that will be an improvement on what the people in this region currently have. So that's the big update. And it's also worth mentioning that Pleasant Point, I guess, has mentioned a well. Pleasant Point Tribal Government has been using funds received from the federal government through the CARES Act to develop a well site that's going to be a roadside spigot for tribal members. We're excited about that, but because of the Settlement Act, even these sorts of little activities need to be permitted by the state of Maine. So we're going through that process now and hope that we can make clean water available to our tribal members sometime soon.
So these solutions sound promising, and hoping for the best for the people of Subiaq, and hoping that these solutions can be permanent, if not, a successful stopgap.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We really don't know yet how successful any of this will be. But what I have to give the tribe credit for is taking slow, deliberate actions, coming up with a plan at short, medium, and long-term options. And we're kind of throwing everything at the wall here to see what sticks, but something will come through, and hopefully we'll see some positive change on the horizon.
Upchurch.
And you've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio with Meredith DeFrancesco and Don Neptune Adams. Today's program was produced with the Sunlight Media Collective. Thanks to Vice Chief Maggie Dana, Representative Rena Newell, Corey Hinton, Amy Brown, and Maria Gerard.